Picture this. It is a freezing December day back in 2017. A man named Sean Montgomery is parked on the side of a road in Illinois.
Right. Just park there.
Just park. Yeah. And out of nowhere, an 80,000-pound Mack truck hauling this massive load of plastic pots veers completely off course.
God.
Yeah, it violently strikes his tractor trailer. And, you know, the crash is just unimaginable. Montgomery sustains these severe permanent injuries, which tragically culminates in the amputation of his leg.
I mean, that is a truly catastrophic event. It just shattered a life in an absolute instant.
Yeah, it really did. And, well, it sparked a legal battle that took nearly a decade to actually resolve. So, welcome to a new deep dive. Our mission today is to unpack a really high-stakes clash over who is ultimately responsible for the safety of those massive trucks sharing the highways with you.
And the sources we are using today are really compelling. We are looking at the actual transcript of oral arguments and the final unanimous Supreme Court slip opinion for a case called Montgomery v. Curry Transport 2, LLC.
Right, and that was literally decided today, May 14th, 2026.
Exactly. And we are looking at a fundamental tension in American law here.
Which is what, exactly?
Well, on one side, you have federal economic deregulation, and that is designed to keep the economy moving cheaply and efficiently. But then on the other side, we have local state safety laws, which are, you know, designed to keep you from getting killed on your morning commute.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the lawsuit Montgomery filed did something that seems, I don't know, a bit counterintuitive at first glance.
How so?
Well, the driver of the truck was a man named Yosniel Varela Mojina, and he worked for a trucking company called Kariba Transport.
Right, the motor carrier.
Yeah, exactly. But Montgomery didn't just sue the driver, and he didn't just sue the trucking company. He went way further up the chain.
He sued the broker.
Yes, he sued the broker who matched them together for this specific shipment, which is a colossal logistics corporation called C.H. Robinson. So my question is, why sue the middleman who wasn't anywhere near the steering wheel? And frankly, does federal law even allow you to do that?
Right. Well, to answer that, we really have to look at the mechanics of the modern freight industry.
Okay.
Specifically, what a broker's day-to-day operation actually looks like. Because brokers are essentially the invisible matchmakers of the transportation world.
Invisible matchmakers. I like that.
Yeah. So let's say a manufacturer has 40 tons of plastic pots that need to go from Chicago to Dallas.
They aren't just opening the yellow pages and calling truckers.
Exactly. They don't want to call individual truckers to find one going that specific way. They call a broker.
So the broker acts as like a travel agent for freight.
That is a perfect way to put it. I mean, they do not own the trucks. They don't hire the actual drivers.
Right.
They sit at desks utilizing these massive software platforms and digital load boards, and they connect the shippers with the goods to the motor carriers, you know, the trucking companies who actually have the vehicles.
So they're just moving data around mostly.
Right. They negotiate a price with the shipper, find a carrier willing to do it for less, and then they pocket the margin. And the scale of this is just staggering.
Oh, I bet. What do the numbers look like?
Well, our sources note there are roughly 28,000 brokers operating in the United States right now.
Yeah, 28,000.
Yeah, and they coordinate about a third of all the freight moving across the entire country.
A third. That is massive.
It is. They are managing interactions with more than 780,000 individual carriers.
So they really are the central nervous system of the whole supply chain. Okay, so Montgomery's lawsuit hits C.H. Robinson with an allegation of negligent hiring.
Right.
Now, for anyone not steeped in legal jargon, a tort is basically a civil wrong that causes someone harm, which then leads to legal liability.
Yes, and the tort of negligent hiring means, you know, you didn't do your homework before bringing someone on board.
Right, and somebody got hurt because of that failure.
Exactly. And the specific allegations against C.H. Robinson in this case are pretty severe.
Because Curb Transport, the carrier they matched for this load, didn't have a clean record.
No, they did not. They had what is called a conditional safety rating from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or the FMCSA.
Okay, a conditional rating. That sounds bad, but what does it actually mean in practice, like on the ground?
Well, it means the federal government actually audited the trucking company and found some pretty significant violations.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. According to the lawsuit, Kareed Transport's conditional rating highlighted major deficiencies in driver qualifications.
Okay.
It highlighted poor management of hours of service.
Means what? Like drivers might be exhausted behind the wheel.
Exactly. Driving too long without sleep. It also showed lax vehicle inspections and a really high recordable crash rate.
So they were basically a rolling hazard.
Right. They weren't quite bad enough for the government to pull their license entirely, but they were definitely operating under a massive federal red flag.
Okay, so Montgomery's legal argument here is that C.H. Robinson, which is a highly sophisticated logistics company, knew or absolutely should have known about this. They should have known that hiring a carrier with that specific safety record to haul 80,000 pounds of freight was, you know, reasonably likely to result in a crash.
The plaintiffs argue that the broker essentially closed their eyes, looked only at the cheap price tag, and sent a ticking time bomb out onto the interstate.
Wow. Okay, I want to try an analogy here to see if I'm tracking the legal philosophy.
Sure.
So if I hire a contractor to paint my house, and they do a spectacularly lousy job, like just terrible.
Right.
I can't be sued by my neighbor for negligent hiring. I mean, painting a house doesn't pose an inherent risk of bodily harm to third parties.
No, it does not.
But if I use an app on my phone to hire a contractor to operate an 80,000-pound piece of heavy machinery directly next to your family minivan on the highway.
Yeah, that is a bit different.
Right. Shouldn't the app be liable if they intentionally send someone with a terrible safety record?
That is the exact philosophical distinction the plaintiff's lawyer, Paul Clement, made during the oral arguments. You are dealing with an inherently dangerous activity. And what's really fascinating here is why the plaintiff's bar, you know, the lawyers representing these accident victims, has increasingly targeted brokers over the last two decades, starting around maybe 2004.
Oh, interesting. Are they just chasing deeper pockets? I mean, a massive corporation obviously has way more money than a mom-and-pop trucking company.
Well, the deep pockets are absolutely a primary factor here because, surprisingly, the federal government only requires trucking companies to carry a minimum of $750,000 in personal injury insurance.
Wait, really? Only $750,000?
Yes, and that number was actually set way back in the 1980s.
Oh, my gosh. That is nothing when you're talking about a catastrophic injury.
Exactly. An amputation, lifetime medical care. $750,000 barely covers the initial hospital stay these days.
So small carriers frequently just cannot pay multi-million dollar judgments.
No. They just declare bankruptcy and fold.
Leaving the victim with, what, a piece of paper saying they won, but no actual compensation?
Sadly, yes. However, there is a broader systemic goal here beyond just compensation.
Okay, what is it?
It is about deterrence. By targeting the brokers, the legal system is basically attempting to incentivize the entities who hold the purse strings.
Ah, right. Hit them where it hurts.
Exactly. If the matchmakers face financial ruin for hiring dangerous carriers, well, they will be forced to prioritize safety in their algorithms.
They will literally have to stop choosing the cheapest, most dangerous option.
Precisely.
That makes perfect sense at the state level. Like, if a state wants to enforce a standard tort law to keep its citizens safe,
right?
Great. So why did this single truck crash have to go all the way to the Supreme Court?
Ah, well, this brings us to the deregulation dilemma. This entire conflict revolves around a piece of federal legislation passed in 1994.
Okay, what is the law?
The Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act, or the FAAA.
The FAAA, yeah.
Okay. And the FAAA fundamentally altered the economics of the logistics industry. To really understand its power, we have to look at how trucking used to work.
All right, take us back.
For decades, the Interstate Commerce Commission, or the ICC, tightly controlled the trucking market.
Oh, I heard of them.
Yeah, it functioned almost like a government-sanctioned cartel.
Really? A cartel?
Basically. The ICC dictated prices, they decided exactly who could drive which routes, and they heavily restricted new companies from entering the market.
Man, that sounds incredibly inefficient.
It really was. It stifled competition, it created massive administrative burdens, and it artificially inflated prices for consumers across the board.
So Congress stepped in.
Right. In 1994, Congress passed the FAAA to dismantle that micromanagement. They wanted the free market to dictate logistics.
Okay, sense.
But to ensure states didn't just replace the old federal bureaucracy with 50 new local bureaucracies, the FAAA includes an express preemption clause.
Meaning federal law trumps state law.
Exactly. It explicitly forbids states from enacting any laws related to a price, route, or service of a motor carrier or a broker.
Wow. Okay, so a total ban on state interference in the business of freight. But wait, there is an exception written into the text, right?
Yes, there is. A very important one.
The safety exception.
Correct. The statute states that this preemption shall not restrict the safety regulatory authority of a state with respect to motor vehicles.
With respect to motor vehicles, okay.
Those five words literally became the multi-billion dollar battleground here.
Okay, I have to push back on the plaintiff's interpretation here.
Right.
Let's think about the day-to-day reality we literally just discussed.
Sure.
A broker is sitting in an office building in, you know, Minneapolis or Dallas.
Right.
They are typing on a keyboard, running software algorithms, maybe making a few phone calls.
Yep.
They don't hire the driver. They don't own the truck. They certainly don't check the tire tread or the brake lines.
No, they don't.
So how can a state lawsuit against a desk-bound middleman possibly be considered a regulation with respect to motor vehicles? I mean, they're moving data, not trucks.
Yeah. And that right there is the exact conceptual knot the Supreme Court had to untangle.
Yeah, it seems pretty tangled.
It is. Mm-hmm. Is holding a middleman liable for a negligent software match a safety regulation concerning a motor vehicle? Or is it an illegal backdoor state intervention into the core services of a broker?
Right.
But the plaintiff's counterargument is pretty straightforward.
What is it?
Well, if the FAA preempts these lawsuits, brokers are completely immunized from the consequences of their actions.
Oh, wow. I see.
Yeah. They could intentionally orchestrate millions of shipments using demonstrably dangerous carriers, profit from the cheap labor, and face absolutely zero legal liability when the inevitable crashes occur.
Because they just say, hey, federal law protects our service.
Like, exactly. They get off scot-free.
Okay, but we have to look closely at the defense, though. Because C.H. Robinson and the U.S. government, who actually filed a brief siding with the brokers, they presented a deeply compelling case for why allowing these lawsuits would cause catastrophic damage to the American economy.
They really did.
Let's look at the thread of the patchwork.
Right. So the defense paints a picture of complete logistical chaos.
Okay.
If states are allowed to sue brokers for negligent hiring, we instantly create a 50-state patchwork of wildly varying legal standards.
And Congress passed the FAA specifically to destroy that kind of fragmentation.
Exactly.
So give me an example of how that fragmentation actually plays out in a broker's office, like practically.
Okay, let's look at the legal concept of proximate cause, which just means how directly responsible the defendant's action was for the actual harm.
Right, making that link.
Suppose California establishes a very loose proximate cause requirement. They decide that simply hiring a carrier with one minor past violation makes the broker liable for a crash.
Okay, so a very strict standard for the broker.
Right. But meanwhile, Texas might require proof that the broker knew the specific driver was intoxicated.
Oh, a much higher bar.
Exactly. So a broker in Chicago coordinating a load from New York to Los Angeles would have to operate under the constant fear of California's strict liability standards.
Man. So to protect themselves, they couldn't just rely on a basic federal license anymore.
No, they couldn't.
They would literally have to hire an army of private investigators and risk management analysts to independently vet all 780,000 carriers against the most aggressive state standards in the country.
Which is hugely expensive. And the brokers argue that vetting carriers is the federal government's job anyway.
Right. That is why the FMCSA exists in the first place.
Exactly. If a carrier possesses a valid federal license to operate on the interstate, a broker should be legally protected if they rely on that federal authorization.
Except the victim's lawyer brought up a terrifying statistic during the oral arguments that kind of blows a massive hole in that reliance.
Yes, they did.
They pointed out that 94% of registered motor carriers haven't actually had a meaningful federal safety inspection.
It is wild. The reality is that the federal government just lacks the funding and manpower to constantly monitor 750,000 trucking companies.
So the defense's argument relies on a federal safety net that is, in many places, entirely full of holes.
That is exactly the plaintiff's point.
Okay, this brings up one of the bizarre aspects of the defense's argument. There is a glitch in the legislation known as the interstate anomaly.
Yes.
Wait, let me make sure I'm explaining this correctly. So the FAAAA has another section, subsection B, which completely preempts state regulation of interstate broker services.
Right.
Meaning a shipment that starts and ends entirely within the borders of a single state, like local trips.
Yes, exactly.
And subsection B has absolutely no safety exception attached to it, which makes absolutely no sense to me.
It is very strange.
Why would Congress write a law that completely shields a broker from being sued for a trip from Los Angeles to San Francisco, but allow them to be sued for a trip from Los Angeles to Reno, Nevada.
Because crossing a state line doesn't suddenly make a truck safer or a broker more culpable.
Exactly. It creates a glaring logical inconsistency.
And the defense uses this anomaly to argue that Congress never intended for brokers to face safety liability at all.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. If Congress cared deeply about state safety laws applying to brokers, they wouldn't have completely barred states from enforcing those laws on local interstate trips.
So they're saying it suggests the safety exception in the interstate section was meant for the physical trucks themselves, not the desk workers.
Precisely. And the defense also pointed to a massive disparity in insurance requirements to back up that theory.
Right.
Congress legally mandates that trucking companies carry that $750,000 in personal injury insurance we talked about.
Yeah.
But they do not require brokers to carry any personal injury insurance at all.
Wait, none?
None. Brokers are only required to hold a surety bond against financial default. Mm-hmm. Which is basically just insurance to make sure the truckers get paid if the broker goes under.
So no bodily injury coverage required.
Right. So the defense poses a logical question here. If Congress envisioned a system where brokers would be routinely hit with $10 million personal injury verdicts, wouldn't they have mandated the insurance coverage necessary to pay those verdicts?
That is a very strong point. I keep thinking about the real-world economic fallout if the defense loses here.
How so?
Well, if we make brokers terrified of these massive tort lawsuits, won't they just default to the, you know, nobody ever got fired for buying IBM strategy?
Ah, flight to massive corporate safety.
Exactly. If I am running a brokerage and a single crash could bankrupt my entire company,
yeah.
I am never going to hire Joe's local trucking startup.
Even if Joe is a perfectly safe, great driver.
Right. I am only going to hire massive monopolies.
Yeah.
You know, FedEx, J.B. Hunt, these companies with massive legal teams and billion-dollar insurance policies.
Right.
But doesn't that entirely freeze out the safe, small trucking companies,
mm-hmm.
which stifles the exact competition the FALA was meant to create in the first place?
It absolutely could.
And ultimately, wouldn't that just raise the price of every single item you and I buy at the grocery store?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights the classic laboratories of democracy problem inherent in our constitutional system.
Okay, walk me through that.
We want states to be able to experiment with local laws to protect their citizens. That is a core feature of the U.S.
Sure.
But in a highly interconnected interstate logistics network, local laws have massive national consequences.
Right. One state's strict rule becomes the national rule.
Exactly. One state with extremely generous plaintiff laws could essentially dictate the trucking rules for the entire United States. The FAAA was enacted to establish a unified, free-flowing national market.
So subjecting that market to the whims of local state juries threatens to plunge the whole system back into the costly, inefficient gridlock of the 1970s.
That is the defense's core fear.
Yes. So we have these really powerful, emotionally resonant arguments about keeping deadly trucks off the road on one side, and highly pragmatic structural arguments about preventing total economic gridlock on the other.
It's a tough balance.
How did the Supreme Court ultimately resolve the text of the law?
Well, Justice Amy Coney Barrett delivered the opinion of the court, and it was a 9-0 opinion. Unanimous.
Wow, unanimous.
The ruling states that the FAA vale does not preempt the claim. Montgomery's lawsuit against the broker is officially saved by the safety exception.
A unanimous decision against the brokers and against the federal government's own position.
Yes.
How do they justify the text?
The justices relied on strict textualism. They actually consulted dictionary definitions from the era the law was written.
Okay, so the 1990s dictionaries.
Right, and they zeroed in on that phrase with respect to, they determined that phrase simply means, you know, concerns or regards.
Okay.
So the legal question then becomes, does a state law requiring a broker to exercise reasonable care in selecting a carrier concern motor vehicles?
And they said yes.
The court concluded that, yes, obviously, it concerns the motor vehicles that will inevitably be used to transport the freight.
So the broker service is just inextricably linked to the physical truck.
Exactly. You cannot separate the two.
But wait, how did Justice Barrett deal with the intrastate anomaly? Did she explain why Congress left that bizarre loophole for local trips?
She acknowledged it as an odd mystery of statutory drafting, but her conclusion was, honestly, essentially a shrug.
Sorry.
She literally wrote, quote, "better to live with the mystery than to rewrite the statute."
Wow.
The court's role is to interpret the text of the interstate exception as it is written right now, not to attempt to fix Congress's sloppy drafting in other sections of the law.
Fascinating. So what else did the justices say?
Well, Justice Kavanaugh wrote a concurring opinion that stepped away from the dictionaries a bit and looked at the grim reality on the ground.
Okay.
He cited some terrifying statistics. In 2022 alone, there were roughly 500,000 truck crashes in the United States.
500,000.
Half a million, resulting in 5,000 deaths and 114,000 injuries.
Man, that is just devastating.
It really is. And he noted that Congress passed the FAA to deregulate the economics of the trucking industry, not to deregulate safety.
Right.
He argued Congress would never have intended to create a legal black hole where the massive corporations orchestrating the freight economy get to operate with zero safety oversight.
So he reinforced the idea that you just cannot separate the matching service from the physical danger it creates.
Exactly.
Here is where it gets really interesting, because during the oral arguments, Paul Clement, who's the victim's lawyer, brought up an analogy that I think perfectly encapsulates the court's logic here.
Oh, the coffee analogy.
Yes. So think about the infamous McDonald's hot coffee lawsuit from the 1990s.
Right.
If Congress passed a sweeping federal law that preempted state regulations with respect to coffee,
yeah,
a tort lawsuit about negligently spilling piping hot coffee into someone's lap obviously still counts under that umbrella.
Of course.
Because the injury is caused by the coffee. So apply that here. Because this negligent hiring tort is ultimately triggered by the physical operation of an 80,000-pound truck, it is obviously a tort with respect to motor vehicles.
It is a brilliant distillation of the principle.
Right.
And look, the court did not entirely dismiss the broker's economic warnings. Justice Kavanaugh explicitly acknowledged the valid concerns about the rising costs of litigation and insurance eventually cascading down to American consumers.
Sure, we all pay for it eventually.
See? However, the ruling asserts that the plain text of the law just prioritizes safety over economic efficiency.
Keep unsafe trucks off the roads.
Right. The court's underlying message to the brokerage industry is basically this. You have the power to protect yourselves. Stop blindly accepting the cheapest bid. Invest the time and resources to actually do your due diligence.
Ask the carriers the hard questions.
Yes. Ask about their safety records, their drug testing policies, and their driver proficiency before you hand them the keys to a 40-ton missile.
So what does this all mean for you, the person listening to this right now? Why should you care about a Supreme Court interpretation of a 1994 trucking statute?
It's a fair question.
Right, because this is not just an academic debate over legal definitions in old dictionaries. This is about the literal physical safety of the highways you drive on with your family every single day.
Yes.
And it's about the invisible, highly complex logistical web that ensures every single package arrives at your doorstep. The Supreme Court just told the matchmakers of the American economy that they are legally and financially on the hook if they choose to match freight with danger.
This decision fundamentally rewrites the risk calculations for a third of the United States' freight economy overnight. It is huge.
It absolutely does. And I want to leave you with a fascinating new angle to ponder as this ruling ripples through the industry.
Let's hear it.
Now that these massive, multi-billion-dollar broker corporations are legally incentivized to deeply, aggressively investigate the habits of every carrier just to avoid ruinous lawsuits, are we about to witness the rise of a privatized, shadow regulatory state?
Oh, wow. It raises profound questions about the future of surveillance and enforcement on the highways.
Exactly. If the federal government only manages to inspect a tiny fraction of carriers, but private brokers face total financial destruction, if a bad driver crashes, corporate supply chains are going to take matters into their own hands.
They will have to.
Could we see brokers demanding real-time access to in-cab cameras?
Very possible.
Will they build massive AI surveillance networks to monitor truck drivers' braking habits, speed, and sleep schedules far more strictly than the federal government ever legally could?
It's a real possibility.
We might be looking at a future where the concept of privacy on the open road is fundamentally erased. And not by government police, but by the algorithm of a corporate freight broker desperately trying to avoid a tort claim.
The heavy lifting on the highway is really just beginning.
It sure is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.